Come on in, Emily.
Hey, I'm Emily. I'm an alcoholic. Do I have a timer somewhere, Sunny? Thank you. Yeah, so my name is Emily. I'm an alcoholic. I have a sponsor. I am a sponsor. I'm in between establishing home groups, which is not a great place to be, but I think I found one, but I don't remember the name of it. And which is awful. If you're new, don't do that. And if you're not new, don't do that either. And my sobriety date is December 2nd, 2007. So I don't come to this meeting a lot anymore, because I'm generally at work. But we are closed today because I live in Boston and the marathon is a holiday. We pretend it's some other holiday, but it's truly because of the marathon. And it would be difficult to work where I work today. So I'm here. And when Sunny reached out to ask me if I could speak, she said, here are two different dates, and these are the steps you'd be talking about. And I said, you pick, you pick. And so of course God did that thing God does, where it's like you have to talk about the steps that you are supposed to be talking about, and it's on a day where you absolutely have no excuse to say no to your sponsor sister who you love. So here we are. And I'm doing real badly right now, to be honest. And I say that at the jump, both to lower your expectations because I'm manipulative, and because I need to like admit where I am. I didn't reread the steps before sitting down, and I'm gonna just trust God. So I started drinking late. I was like 16, 17, and I wasn't ever gonna drink. But then like life hurt too much, and quite frankly, that's the story of my drinking. Like I could obviously just drunk log for hours, but most of it would be lies because I don't remember that much because I was drunk. And the truth is that like at first drinking really relieved like all my depression and my anxiety, and it quite frankly saved me, and I didn't care about consequences. It took a while before it started to take anything I cared about. And the truth is that my brain is very good at telling me that there's nothing I care about. So I don't have one of those stories where like I was going to lose a partner. Like I didn't care if I lost partners, and I didn't have kids, and I was gainfully employed because my union is powerful. And it was like, and I couldn't see who I was really hurting because I was like too stuck in self, And so I was 27 and I kept not dying. And that was truly what brought me into these rooms, was that if I had gone to a doctor and that doctor had said, like, Emily, you keep drinking like this, you're going to be dead in 2 years, I would have been jubilant, like I would have been like, thank you for the good news. I only have to drink for 2 more years. I can do that. I'm good at drinking, And the problem was that that didn't happen. And the problem was that I knew I didn't drink like everybody else. And I knew that like fewer and fewer people wanted to be around me when I was drinking, and that I couldn't not drink. And I knew that it wasn't normal to drink in the morning, take pills throughout the day so I could say I wasn't drinking at work, and then drink as soon as I was like allowed to leave work. And I knew that wasn't normal, right? Like that rotating liquor stores isn't normal, right? That like lying to everyone in my life about what was going on wasn't normal. But the truth that I couldn't admit to anybody was that when I didn't drink, my life was so much worse. It was so much worse. And I always believed in this God, and I didn't understand why this God had made me so broken, you know? And if drinking was the only thing that made my life tolerable, why was it killing me or not killing me, right? And like, why was I so broken that I just couldn't exist in the world? It was physically painful to exist in the world. And for me, that is the crux of my alcoholism, because lots of people drink like I drank and they don't have what I have because they stop and they like live their lives. And I had a friend a long time ago who she stopped drinking because her husband needed to stop drinking. And I firmly suspect he's one of us, because he stopped drinking and his life got bad. He was miserable. She stopped drinking and she was fine. She was president of the PTA and she went running every day and she was like super fun mom and all these things. And it came up in conversation that when she drank, she drinks like a couple bottles of wine. But she's not like me, because she cannot drink and be happy, and I don't have that. So I came into these rooms and I couldn't see that my life was unmanageable because I was housed and employed. And my sponsor was like, I don't honestly, I can't tell you what my sponsor said. I want to be one of those people who can do that. And I'm not gonna lie to you guys. But what I started to see was that like booze ran my life, and that that wasn't normal. And perhaps I wasn't managing quite so well if I was just letting go of everything, so that my life was get would get smaller and smaller and smaller. And I had no problem. I had no problem admitting that I was insane. I'd been clinically depressed my whole life. Like, I've been locked up lots of times. I don't actually know how many times. Not that many, two or three. And like, my whole family's crazy. So like, I was insane. Sure, absolutely. That there was a power that could relieve me of my insanity, that seemed excessive. But my sponsor was like, "Do you think that there's something that could get you sober and be happy? And do you believe that I was as sick as you?" And like, now I live a fairly functional life. And I was like, okay, I can buy that. She was like, great. That's good enough. It's good enough, right? The same thing with turning my life and my will over to the care of God is that like, I didn't 100% knew, understand what that meant, right? It's my thoughts and my actions, but I could focus on the care, and I could focus on this idea that like I was committing to do the rest of these steps, and I didn't have anything else, you know? Like, at least now I was around nice people who like didn't think my drinking was weird. So like, all right, cool. So I could do that. And so I dove into this inventory and I read my inventory to my sponsor, and you get to six and seven, right? And I've gone through that whole process several times, right? But what I really want to talk about is that like what six and seven looks like to me today, you know, because I haven't had a drink in a really long time. And I'm realizing in this being 16 years sober that like it's dishonest to pretend that's not a long time. And it's not as long as my sponsor. It's not as long as some friends, you know? But like it's so much longer. It's longer than I drank. And it's longer than I could ever conceive of staying sober. And it's such a long time. When I got sober, people were like, "Just can you do it for a day?" And I was like, "No. How could you ask me to not drink for a whole day?" You know? And now I haven't had a drink in 16 years. And if booze was my problem, then everything would be perfect, right? But booze was my solution. And it stopped working. So I've been thinking a lot lately about this line, maybe just for the past day or so. I've been thinking a lot about the line in the book that's God is everything or God is nothing. What was our choice to be? Right. And I was thinking about that. If God is everything, because the idea of God being nothing is too much. It's too much for me. I can't. So God is everything. And if God is everything, that means God is all parts of me, right? That God is my depression too. So how can I use my depression to better serve God? How can I use my fear to better serve God? And today, the best I can do is to say yes when my sponsor sister asks me to talk, right? Because that's an opposite action. And that's the gift of 16 years. It is no offense to anyone who this works for. Why I don't say whoever woke up earliest has the most sobriety day. And if that works for you, legit, that's very cool. And I would like to hear more about it. But for me, it doesn't work because I have 16 years of like having pretty bad depressive episodes. I'm on medicine. I do all the things, you know, and I normally wouldn't talk about it because it's an outside issue, but it comes up here because depression and untreated alcoholism look real similar, you know? And I bring it up here not because I want people to talk about their outside issues in the breakout rooms, because if I could be the boss for a second, which I can't, please don't do that. We don't need to do that, right? I bring it up because it's another thing that feeds my character defects, and my character defects feed it, right? My character defects say, oh, well, I got this thing. I got this thing that's wrong with my brain. And so I don't have to do the things. I can be dramatic and horrible and hurt people because it's not my fault. I have this thing in my brain, right? And that's what I wanted to talk about because that's the character defects. It's okay that my brain is different. It's okay that I'm sick right now. It's okay that I'm struggling. That's okay. Like, of course, when I got sober, I wanted it to be all rainbows and puppies and butterflies. Of course I wanted that. Who doesn't want that? You know? I don't want to just be happy. I want to be manic. I'm a drunk. Of course that's what I want. Right? But like, if God is everything, God's in that too. So that like twisted desire, that not knowing what is self-care and what is self-pity, that's okay. Because if I get quiet, God can show me how to ask for help. And God can, you know, whisper in my ear, you know, what you want to do right now is isolate because that's your go-to. So you're going to reach out to a sponsor sister you know who also has depression, and you're going to tell her the truth. Our sponsor's out of the country too, so that's super fun. And but she's not God, right? Like, she's allowed to leave the country. I'm not relying upon her. And, you know, and this character defect that gets so activated in these times, right? Because my character defects are activated by fear. And that's where my depression really pushes, right? It's this voice in my head that tells me my fear is real. And like, and so it activates these character defects. And my head tells me nobody loves me. And nobody's going to miss me if I'm gone. And except my kid. I got to stay alive for my kid. But nobody else loves me and nobody else cares about me. And it doesn't matter. And like, I want to throw up as I'm saying this to you guys because I'm looking at Sunny and I'm going to cry. Because Sunny would be really sad if I was gone. You know, and like, I have other friends in this meeting who would be really sad if I was gone. But fear doesn't care about that, right? And your character defects don't care about that because they're lies. But one of the lies is that my character defects make me defective. And that's not true. They make me human, right? I'm not perfect. And I swear to you guys, I was in my first year of sobriety. And I sat in this meeting. And I said, in all seriousness, you guys, but what if I end up perfect? Then what am I going to do? What if God relieves me of all this stuff? And I was probably crying like I am right now. I was so scared. God is going to make me perfect. Oh, man, I love it. I was a riot as a newcomer. I was unhinged. And I'm still pretty unhinged, but woo. And the gift, right? The 6 to 7 transformation for me, this is all off the top of my head. So it could be God inspired and it could be caca. So, like, you know, if it resonates, cool. And if it doesn't, you can just laugh at me and go on with your day. The 6 to 7 transformation is this letting of God in, right? Is this recognition of this thing isn't working for me anymore, right? This telling myself I'm not lonely, I can push everyone away. That's not working, right? I let God in 7. I look at it through a fear lens, right? I look at it through, like, you know, when we do this fear inventory, when we did this fear inventory in 4, or anytime you need to do a fear inventory, we say, you know, like, what proof do I have that this is a legit fear, right? And what have I been doing to accommodate this fear? How have I tried to solve this on my own, right? And, like, spoiler alert, the question is, how has self-reliance failed me? So, like, I'm going into it knowing, like, I didn't do a good job. I clearly wasn't able to address this fear on my own, you know? So I gotta let God in. I gotta say, what would God have me do? What would God have me be, right? And if fear is the activator of my character defects, I gotta do that here too. And to me, like, what humbly asking God to remove these character defects, to take all of me, good and bad, is that spiritual alchemy my sponsor talks to me about. It's saying, I don't know how to use this to help your kids. Because I don't think that isolating is helping God's kids. Like, that I'm smart enough to see, right? I don't think that, like, not answering the phone when people call me is, like, what God really wants. Nor does it make people call me more and alleviate any sort of loneliness, right? So, like, you know, I can laugh in the midst of all this because I know I'm not alone, because I know that the voices in my head aren't telling me the truth, because I've got 16 years of experience telling me stuff passes, you know what to do. When you isolate, just stop isolating. And if you can't call someone, text them. And if you can't do that, heart a message in the group chat. You know, like, ask God for help. Do anything. Take a shower, right? And it's this little stuff. Reach out to someone you know isn't going to text you back, you know? And, like, I don't know. This is a thing I have that has been a challenge for me probably always, at least for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. It's been hard, you know, and I've been sober a long time. But, like, I had a baby. I was, like, in a not ideal marriage, and I really like to just work all the time instead of engaging in life. You know, and I'm, like, really good at it, you know, like, when you do well at work, everyone, like, I'm like, that's the place I'm, like, successful, so I'm gonna do that more, right? Character defect, you know. But for me, it's like my character defects, a lot of them have to do with this, like, deluded sense of self, and that I'm trying to prove my worth, or, like, I don't know, make you like me, which is the same thing. And, like, it's me thinking I can control anything outside of myself. And, like, I have too much time left, so I'm going to tell you guys this story that I can't tell if I should tell you or not, but here we go. Buckle up. My kid is on a plane right now with her father, who is a wonderful father and a wonderful human and would never put our daughter or any of our children in danger, and is utterly to be trusted, utterly. And I was texting with her before she got on the plane. She's been like, we've been talking about the plane ride a lot. She's been a little nervous. She hasn't been on a plane since she was like 2, and she's 8 and a half now. So she doesn't remember. And like, she's nervous, right? I think that that's like a very normal, healthy reaction to new situations. And my brain, which you'll recall is like not functioning at peak levels at the moment, told me that this plane is going to go down. When I tell you, I didn't know I could scream like that. I decided, because I'm a spiritual giant, to like go hard into that line of thinking. And that's not a line of thinking I ever entertain. Ever. I don't read stories where kids die. I don't think about my kids dying. I don't think about bad things happening to my kids. I'm not good at hearing about bad things happening to other people's kids, but I can like put on my like sponsor brain and turn it off, you know? I went hard. And in case anyone is considering doing this, don't. It was not fun. It wasn't good. And it was me like mourning the loss of a child who I was actively texting with, right? But I was doing it because this was my last chance to make sure she knew how much I loved her before she died, right? Like, insane. Insane. And here's why I bring it up. Partially to kill time. Partially. I hesitate, right? Because when I was new, I didn't want to hear that. I didn't want to hear that someone could have 16 years of sobriety and everything isn't perfect and easy. And so if you're feeling that way, I apologize because I didn't want to hear it either. But the thing is that life is going to life. And she's going to be okay. Even if she dies, she's going to be okay. And that's all I really care about, right? And more than that, like, I told a friend, right? Like, I didn't keep it in my head. And I got in the shower and I showed up for my meeting and I did my things. And I'm like hanging out with you all and laughing. And that's where being sober today is different from when I would try to be not drinking back in the day. It's that like God can metabolize these character defects. I get to invite God in and God changes it because there's nothing wrong with loving my kid and there's nothing wrong with grief. And like that level of projecting less than ideal, it's not something I do frequently. I went off the rails. But then I came back because I've got these bumpers now, like in bowling, where like I went off the rails and I was talking to God. I didn't text my ex-husband and tell him that he can't get on this plane because I had a premonition. That would have been actually insane, right? I knew that my brain was lying to me. And that's the gift, right? Is that like, I've done all this work. And no, the work never ends. And no, I'll never be perfect. And I'm not sure what perfect means. But like, I get to live on this plane now. And when I was drinking, do I have about 5 minutes, Sunny? Okay. When I was drinking, the thing was, is that like me and reality were getting like further and further apart. And I was checking in less and less, you know? And so I say like, oh, you know, I was a really high bottom drunk. And I had this mentor when I was new who used to say, the longer you stay sober, the lower your bottom gets. Because you clear up, right? And your perspective changes and you like get this God who gives you hope and you live your life like a normal person. And you start to have normal people problems instead of like wild drunk problems. And like, I was so far from reality. I can't even tell you how much I drank because I lied so much when I came in. And I couldn't tell you how low my bottom was, right? And I couldn't tell you the good and the bad things about me. So in that prayer, when I'm giving God my character defects, right? But I'm giving God all of me, the good and the bad. Because character defects are just character assets out of proportion, right? They're just characteristics. They're just tools that I use to survive that I don't need anymore. And I don't know which ones are going to be useful to you and which ones aren't. So I let God decide which ones go away and which ones stay. And like, I know which ones I want to go away, you know, but like enough to put in any work. My first sponsor's husband used to always say, you ask for God to remove your character defects, and then you go out in the world and you act like someone who just asked God to remove that character defect. But that's different from do better, try harder. Because my go-to is do better, try harder. My go-to is I should be calling 6 sponsor sisters a day. Why are you in a big sponsorship family, Emily, if you're not going to call every single person every single day? Which would be insane, by the way. My sponsorship family is very big. And like, that's me trying to control it, right? But God doesn't ask me to do that. God's not asking me to fix me because God doesn't think I'm broken, you know? And the last thing I'll say is that like, my kid was trying to reach something and, she finally confessed to me that what she had done was pulled a chair into my closet. My closet is wonderful. And then she put a stool on that chair. I mean, she's 8. And that makes sense, right? She was just trying to get higher. I wasn't mad. And not because I'm like super balanced or centered or any of these things. You all heard how crazy I am. But because like I understood what she was trying to do and she just went about it in a dangerous way. She just made a mistake. And I said, oh, and we talked about some things she could have done instead, right? And watching her struggle with this stuff, it's all stuff I struggle with. She could have asked for help. She's like, absolutely not. And I'm like, oh no, I've broken her, you know? And, but that's how God sees me. God thinks I'm perfect and God doesn't think I need to get better. And God doesn't think I'm broken. You know, God sees that I'm trying my hardest. And then I just don't know how to use this tool just yet. But God gave me all of you to teach me how to use these tools. You know, how to let God in and transform it from like a weapon to something useful. And so I don't have to be alone anymore. And even when my brain tells me I am alone, the gift of this program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the gift of this higher power I have found, whom I call God. And if that is a problem for you, let me tell you, probably wouldn't be if you heard the definition that I have. Like, because it's pretty agnostic. God did that for me. And that changes everything, you know? So I hope this was useful and long enough. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Emily, for a wonderful talk today. AA has no dues or fees for AA membership, but we do have expenses. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. We are observing the seventh tradition digitally on Venmo. You should see our Venmo address in the chat, but it's @beacon-group. Please take a moment to make a contribution if you can. If you do not have a Venmo account and would like to send a contribution through the mail, I'm sure that we already have put our mailing address in the chat, so you can do it that way. All our contributions support AA's general service, and thank you in advance for your generosity. If you are doing it on Venmo, could you please put in the liner note for the noon step meeting? Thank you. Our business meetings for this, if you're looking for a home group, we would love to have you. Our business meetings for this noon meeting are held virtually on the third Monday of every month at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time following the regular meeting. That's today, in case you were wondering. The Beacon Group's overall business meetings are both in person and on Zoom on the third Wednesday of the month at 9:15 p.m. To sign up for membership and to be on the email list, please visit our website, which is posted in the chat. Our website has a lot of great information as well as the recordings of our meetings. We will now have AA announcements. Hi, I'm Sunny, and I am still an alcoholic, and we have service positions available at this meeting. If you are thinking of taking on the service commitment, please leave your name and number in the chat or take my number down. It's right there in that little square, and shoot me a text, and we will talk. And if you have a sponsee who's about ready to get into service, send them on over to us. We have entry-level positions, and we will put them to work. And thank you in advance for your consideration. Thanks to everyone who has agreed to run a breakout room today. Please keep in mind to give equal time to everyone who wishes to share. Do not crosstalk or offer feedback. Please take a moment to be sure that your audio is muted and wait to be called upon. In a moment, you will be connected to your breakout rooms. You will automatically come back to the main meeting at the end of the small group discussion.